was that website again?
Okay, it's going to be veryperry.com. At the moment, it has a brochure to a lecture series I was given. Hopefully tonight I can change it, so kind of give it till tomorrow.
Is that one word, Very?
Yeah, veryperry.com. It's a little egotistical, I know, but it's just,
yeah,
it's a domain I kind of use for different things. Okay, so here we are, Q&A session on when I talked about the existence of a universe. So, questions. Okay, why don't I start?
Yeah, I agree personally, you know, that God exists, so I don't have any problem at all with that. Where I differ from you, however, you seem to be closed-minded. I guess you're taking some kind of Judeo-Christian view that life only exists in our little area here. And yet, you know, earlier you were telling us about how big, you know, and how many galaxies and this, that, and clusters that the universe has. To me, I think it's statistically highly unlikely that we're the only life. And I don't understand why you're so close-minded about insisting that we're the only life when it's very likely that we're not. Would you like to reply to that?
Sure. Let me go ahead and follow that. Back in the Carl Sagan days, there was the idea there's billions and billions of stars out there, probably billions and billions of planets. Yes, even if it's, you know, life is rare, it's got to be plentiful through the universe. And there's something that was come up, something called the Drake equation. Okay, and this is an idea of trying to get an idea how many planets suitable for their life could there be there. And you might say, okay, well maybe it takes a certain type of star that's only one in 1,000, and a certain type of planet around that that would only be like one in 10,000. And then you need a certain level of oxygen, and the odds of that are very low. So you come up with these things that you would need to support life. Each has a very low probability, and you would multiply those up, and you would get, well, just randomly given any planet, what's the probability that it's going to support life, and you get some small number. But you multiply that by a billion stars, 100 billion stars, in each of 200 billion galaxies. Okay, you're multiplying a very small probability by a very large number, you're probably going to still come up with something like 50 million probable life sites in the universe. So that was the thought during the Carl Sagan days. But what has happened is that as science has marched on, we're finding more and more criteria for life. You have a certain level of criteria to support bacterial life, okay, for a short period of time. More stringent criteria to support bacterial life for a long period of time, meaning a planet that can recycle nutrients and sustain itself, and even something much more rigid that can support advanced life like us. It turns out that if you add up all these criteria, it is, so there's literally now over 200 things that have been identified necessary for a planet to support life. If you add those up, you get a probability that is so infinitesimally small, even with 100 billion stars in each of 200 billion galaxies, you should not even have an Earth, let alone any place that can support life. So back in the Carl Sagan days, you had scientists that would make the argument, well, why do we need to invoke a God? Because we have so many potential life sites out. You even have scientists now making the philosophical argument, why would there be a God that would make a universe that's so big but utterly sterile than besides the Earth? You know, that's kind of where the mindset's going. It's just that it's so rare.
Okay, I only have one comment, okay?
Sure.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. I just don't agree with it. To
sure.
me, it sounds like a very elaborate rationalization. I also see no reason why, you know, for some reason, other than what you're explaining, that there has to be, we're the only life form. It makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, you guys, in fact, what you're using, I think, is induction rather than deduction to get at this conclusion that we're the only life form. It's not an intelligent, well, it is intelligent from your point of view, but to me, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, God would not just, in my opinion, it wouldn't make sense that it would just have this tiny life in this great big universe And the other thing is, you really don't know what the probabilities are, because you don't know anything about all of these distant stars and these distant clusters and these distant galaxies. I'm sorry, I just don't agree with you. I do agree, about the fact that, the uniqueness of our existence is because it is very highly unlikely that we came about randomly. That's why I do believe in God. I'm just saying that I can't believe that God just confined himself to creating us and not, other thing other than the fact that if you're a Christian or a Jew, that's how your belief goes. That, that's just how it is. So that's the only thing I could say.
Yeah, let me just throw out, from a theological standpoint, God could have created life any place. Yeah. But I was just speaking, if you just try and calculate how rare life would be if you just take a statistical method, it's something that's extremely rare. By the way, for those of you who are going to do the pub crawl, you might want to kind of scoot out. Pub crawl. Next question.
Okay. Do I need this in my face?
Just so I get the recording.
Okay, it's two simple questions. Sure. One concerns the references you made to Scripture, where you talk about heaven and earth as actually being a single word, and also we talk about God stretching out the universe now. Mm-hmm. Is this based, do you read Hebrew? Have you studied the original? Or have you had some other authority explained it to you as to the actual original meaning of the words in the scriptures? That's my first question.
Sure.
The second one having to do with the Big Bang, if that is, all right, we can say the Big Bang is the beginning of time, but that it doesn't necessarily follow that the Big Bang comes out of nothing. I mean, there has to be something there before it occurs, even though that might be something static or unchanging over the ages, but matter concentrated in some form or energy or something like that. So, are people studying the conditions prior to the Big Bang, or are they working on what those conditions were? Okay, those are my two questions.
Okay, excellent questions. First of all, the question about the scripture references. I don't know Hebrew myself, but I've heard these from people that have studied Hebrew, say this is the usage, these are the actual words. And you've got close that door real quick. With written Hebrew, back at the time that was written, you only had some 6,000 written words. We have something like a million written words in English. And so you had a lot of use of compound nouns. So that was a definite usage of heavens and earth. It's just how you kind of think that from back then. There's no planes or spaceships. You're standing on the earth. You tend to think of what's under you. You just look up this stuff you call the heavens.
The usual translation makes it sound like two separate entities. What you're saying is in the original, it doesn't mean that. It means actually a single creation, as it were.
It kind of means all of the physical realm. By the way, another interesting thing I'll just mention is sometimes you'll hear the first heaven, second heaven, and third heaven. Okay. First, and that's another use of the word heaven. First heaven basically means where the rain and weather comes from. Second heaven is the domain of the stars, and third heavens would be the domain of the God. And so, for those of you that are Christian theology, where in the Book of Revelations it says, "I was caught up to the third heaven." It's not like a better part of town kind of thing. It's kind of saying the spiritual realm. But I want to get your question about the Big Bang. Coming from nothing. Right, the Big Bang did not come from nothing, okay? And the space-time theorems of general relativity says it came from a causal agent. Now, whatever that is, we don't know. Let me kind of tell you a little bit more about how we can look back in time. If we look through a telescope and you look at distant objects that we can see, like galaxies, we can look back to about 12 billion years ago. Maybe it's closer to 13 billion years ago. That's out of 13.8 billion years ago is the age of our Earth. This something called the cosmic microwave background radiation happened to do when they after the Big Bang happened, when that happened, you had a point where everything was infinitely dense and infinitely hot and expanded out. And as it's expanding out, it's cooling. It finally cooled to a temperature where gas is no longer ionized, meaning electrons aren't stripped off the nucleus, you can get atoms forming, and then they started emitting light, and that happened about 300,000 years after the Big Bang. So what we're seeing in the cosmic microwave background radiation is this light emitted 300,000 years into the beginning of things. Now, when you try and look back farther than that, we can't through observations, but we can do it symbolically in these particle colliders, where we, like there's this big one under France, this big thing they just recently started, where you're accelerating subatomic particles to these ridiculous speeds, colliding them with huge energies, and see reactions that would mimic what things would look like within the first millionth or millionth of a second of the Big Bang. So we can kind of see symbolically what things are like. But to try and see past it, it's a veil. There's no way we can see past time zero or have any evidence for what was time zero. It's kind of like, you know, you're sort of now in the realm of philosophy and logic. With the exception of this multiverse, if you can think, hey, that there is this other structure that somehow preexisted us, that's kind of a different thing. Mm-hmm. Does that help?
Well, I'm just thinking of what caused the Big Bang. What was there that was capable of generating it? It had to be something there. Unless you want to say, you know, the pure theist would say, you know, bingo, God decided to make the universe. But that's, you know, even for a believer, that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, and that's the question of the day. The Big Bang isn't an explanation of things. The Big Bang isn't, it's not a thing, it's an event, okay? Mm-hmm. And what caused this event, okay? That's the big question, you know? Do you take a theological answer, you know? Is there some other scientific answer that's beyond what we can understand because it's beyond our physics that we can measure or whatever? And so really the theological explanation isn't one that, well, I don't know whatever else, but you know, I don't have a reason, I can't explain it, so it must be God. It's not that case. It's that everything is so fine-tuned. It's just like you have a mountain versus the Great Pyramids of Egypt. Well, the mountain you can attribute to natural causes, the Great Pyramids, now wait a minute, something must have made this. And that's what we see in our universe. So that's the driving force for theological explanation.
Yeah, but I sort of had the same conversation with a physicist who was also a Catholic priest, uh-huh. And he did not think, you know, it didn't necessarily be an instantaneous thing that God did, but he's saying, you know, now we are trying to study what was there before the Big Bang and what kind of a physical reality was there before that. So there's nothing, I mean, it's sure. There's no conflict with religion in that respect.
Well, and I think that even if there is a multiverse, even if we find out that there are other universes, that's not a conflict with religion. Okay? It's just that if you take a non-theistic view, okay, that there is no God, you're pretty much forced into a multiverse view. Or at least that's the way that's kind of being headed philosophically.
I would address his question. I'll shut up in just
sure.
a second. But
sure.
With the SETI experiments that have been going on for something like 30 or 50 years, and they found zero as far as radio transmissions from other parts of the galaxy or anywhere else in the universe. So.
Yeah, let me sort of comment on that as well. SETI is interesting because some people ask, well, science, what place does science have considering an intelligent agency? Okay, well, if we go into this and say, well, the concept of intelligent design pointing to some type of God or creator. Well, a lot of fields of science are intelligent design fields. Archaeology, you're looking at piles of rocks. Is this a natural cause, or is there an intelligent civilization that did this? SETI stands for Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Okay, they have these big radio telescopes pointed to different parts of the galaxy, listening for signals that they could identify as an intelligently designed signal. That is purely an intelligent design science. And at the moment, they haven't found anything, and there's the likelihood is very small, and they will admit the likelihood is very small, but that just say, fine, if we find something, the value of it would be so great. And interestingly, they're also sending signals out to stars thinking maybe somebody will answer us. There's a lot of people, though, that say, hey, don't do this. You know, well, it's sort of a little bit like the Native Americans going to the, you know, Spaniards, we're over here, send a ship, you know. It's like, you know, what makes them think that they're going to be malevolent? Oh, we come in peace, you know. So it's There's a lot of people.
What makes us think they're going to be able to get here while we still care if the speed of light is limited?
Well, that's the whole thing. It's like that gets in the whole thing of space travel, and that's just, in my view, isn't really impossible. But it just, you know, you kind of say, you know, like we should kind of keep our heads down. You know, so it's kind of an interesting idea.
By the time they hear it, we'll be here anyway. We'll kill ourselves.
You know, when the aliens finally do make contact with us, I'd like to see what your rationalization is going to be. I really will.
Sure.
I'll eat crow then.
Yeah, sure. You will eat crow.
Well, and another thing.
They'll have recipes.
Another thing I'll comment on as well is we're discovering other planets out there. Now, the planetary systems that we have found have not been anything like the Earth, but the tools that we have, the planetary systems we have not been anything like our solar system. None of them would be able to support life. But the tools that we have a bias to find certain types of solar systems that would tend to be sterile by nature, because they tend to find what are called, the easiest planets to find are what are called hot Jupiters. Very large planets like Jupiter that orbit very close to the sun. And none of those, just by the nature of that, if you have a Jupiter-sized planet that's close in, it would disturb any Earth-type of planet, and it was called a habitable zone that's not too hot. So yes, you would say, yes, we haven't found anything like ours, but, well, that's because we have a bias to find the ones that are not like us. You know, just if that is kind of in its infancy, that whole area. Question.
Well, my problem is this, and I have to be real careful when I say this to anybody, but I've thought about this for many years, and it's in some of the philosophy books. Bringing this back to God, creation to God, doesn't end the question. If we are rejecting the static state of the universe, aren't we applying the static state theory to God, that God always was and always will be? Now, that's what I was taught in Catholic school. Whether it's true or not, that's what we were taught. That is the static state theory. And I remember thinking then, well, why can't we apply that to the universe? And I never got a sufficient answer. Now, the scientific theories that you're giving on the static state universe are very compelling, but don't they also work with respect to God or who created God? If God's the ultimate creator, who created the ultimate creator? So we just, and then if you get that answer, then you go back one more and we keep leapfrogging over this. What's your comment on that?
Excellent question. There's another website I'm working on, and this is, maybe I'll put a link to this on the very very one. It's called awakenedbyscience.com. And what I did is I gave a series of a 10-part lecture of a series of a scientific look at the Bible to a mix of like about one-third Christians, one-third atheists, and one-third different views. Some Mensa people were there. And this group bonded extremely well. I mean, it was just, everybody got along and loved it because they can kind of enjoy these questions. One of the things I talked for 40 minutes on is, if God made the universe, who made God? Okay, which is that question. And so, if you're interested, that website's under construction. Give it about 2 months. You can download a 40-minute talk on that.
Will that be on your website, verityperry.com?
I will give a link to that other, I'll give a link to that second one. Maybe if I get a chance, I might put that topic on there as well, if I can do that in the next couple of days. I'll try and get it there by Sunday. But let me give you kind of a nutshell, not the 40-minute answer for this. I'm going to give you two out of three arguments. In our universe, we have one dimension of time, okay? Time, you know, and it only marches in one direction. Okay, it's in our concept, it's hard to wrap our hands around something that would be a beginner that doesn't have to have a beginner itself. Okay, if you have an environment that has two dimensions of time, okay, things could look very differently where we wouldn't necessarily struggle with that question. There's something fascinating. If you guys go to YouTube, search for Dr. Quantum Visits Flatland, okay? And that's like a five-minute video of a three-dimensional being looking at a two-dimensional world and communicating with a two-dimensional world, okay? And it's to show you mentally what it's like going from a two-dimensional reality to a three. So try and imagine what it would be like going from our reality that has one dimension of time to another reality that has two dimensions of time. I can't comprehend that at all, but it's possible that those questions could look very different. And if you look especially in a Christian concept, when it describes God operating in a different concept of time than what we have. So that's one way of addressing the question. But let me give you another way of addressing it. You're either left with an infinite regress. Well, if God made the universe, who made God? Well, whoever made God, who made him? And it kind of goes back infinitely. Or there has to be some reality that exists out of its own right, okay, that does not have a cause, that is just a brute force reality. That could very well be a God, okay? If you look at some of the writings, like especially some of the books on a universe from nothing, they talk about the laws of physics as a brute force reality. Well, and the arguments are, given the laws of physics that we have, this universe would have had to have appeared and had to happen. So they never address who made the laws of physics, okay? But philosophically, you're going to have to come up with something that is a brute force reality that stands on its own, that had nothing made it, or you have an infinite regress, okay? Now, the question is, would that brute force reality have to be something that has a consciousness? Would it have to be something that's self-aware? Okay, and I think that's the interesting philosophical answer. So I know it's not, maybe that must be the most satisfying answer, but that's kind of the best I can throw out real quick.
No, I appreciate that. I just want to mention on the comment the gentleman made on the Catholic physicist. I know that person. I know who he's talking about. And one time I was at his church, and he said a Higgs and boson particle tried to come in for services in the Catholic Church, and he said we don't accept Higgs and boson in the church here. And he said, "What do you mean? Without me, there'd be no mass."
Oh, that's very good.
Well, do you think any of this would be easier if we worked in a language that didn't ask if time flies like a banana? Why do fruit flies like bananas? If time flies like an arrow, why do we have fruit flies that like bananas? Time flies like an arrow.
Oh, I get you. That's right.
Fruit flies like bananas.
There you go. There you go. Thanks.
Couple of random things that have come up.
Sure.
First of all, in terms of other life, just because, there might be rare instances of life that is like us, that doesn't mean there might not necessarily be life that's not like us. Europa has oceans. There's at least one other moon that's perceived to have oceans in our own solar system. So I don't see any reason why there wouldn't possibly be dolphin-like life there of a relatively high level. Secondly, regarding what we were talking about in terms of who might have created God, there's a very simple explanation that I once heard from a Catholic friend who had heard this in church, and it just has to do with a simple analogy. If you hold a couple of mirrors up to each other, you can see the reflection of one mirror in the other, and then look at the other mirror, see the reflection of that reflection, and so forth. But at a certain point, there are limits of human perception. And it's very possible that God is something, whoever created God, whoever created that being, is just beyond the limits of what we can perceive with our limits. Just like one of the things that makes it hard to imagine other beings being here is because of the limitations of speed of light. But you know, because the speed of light is the fastest thing we can perceive, it doesn't mean that it's the fastest thing out there. And there may be things beyond our perception. There may be beings that you know don't have to observe the speed of light. That they're beyond that. And I'll start with that. I've got one more thing.
Sure. Let me sort of comment on a couple things. The last thing on that: if God made us, who made God? Well, you made a very good point. What if something did make God? Well, if God made us, we're accountable to God because He made us. We're not responsible to who made God. You know, that's not our problem. It's kind of what you said. Yeah, maybe something else did make God, but it's just, you know, kind of beyond our job description in a sense to kind of know.
He could be God to us, but there could be somebody else that's God to Him.
Exactly. So that's, you got that possibility too. The other thing about other forms of life, yeah, life could be quite different. You know, like there could be another. And Europa is probably the only possibility for. Well, it's the only place you got a large amount of liquid water in our solar system.
There's one more moon, but I can't remember what it is. I think it's the moon of Saturn as opposed to Jupiter.
Oh, Titan.
No, there's one more.
Yeah, they might have liquid water underneath. Yeah, that's right. It is like a big ice ball.
Yeah.
But the one thing that in terms of the concept of different types of life, it probably is going to have to be carbon-based just because of the only other molecules similar to carbon are silicon and boron. I think it's boron, but silicon would be the closest substitute to carbon. But it doesn't have the bonding power to make these large, massive molecules that we can get with carbon. And so scientists are at least kind of narrowing it down to carbon-based. And most likely you have to have water as a solvent. So it probably has to be an environment that has liquid water. But given that, it could sort of be radically different. You did one other comment you wanted to
throw? I did. Okay, this is about... This is about black hole theory. I did a lot of research way back in high school about 30 years ago. One of the best books I read on the subject was Black Holes, The End of the Universe? ? By John Gerald Taylor. And he had some interesting theories, and I'm just curious to see whether these theories are currently up to date or whether there's different thinking now. The idea was that when something enters a black hole, basically, in most cases, it would be crushed by the singularity. But since matter can't be destroyed, it has to go somewhere. And the theory at the time was that anything crushed by the singularity would then, if it was alive, it would obviously be dead, but it would, travel through the theoretical wormhole and come out what they were theorizing at the time as what was called a white hole, which, they found, they were showing exploding galaxies at the time. And the theory was that the white holes were at the center of these galaxies. Since that time, this wasn't really prevalent then, but they've also thought that, now black holes exist in many, if not most, galaxies at the center. So I was just curious how current that theory is. The alternate theory was that if you had a rotating black hole, it would be theoretically possible to work your way around the edge, and it would be more like a revolving door, and that a revolving black hole, if you manage to enter one but avoid the singularity, it would be like a revolving door, and at that point, it would actually be the entrance to another universe. In fact, an infinite amount of them. But because there were so many, it would just be a revolving point where you could theoretically never get back to your original one. Your personal theory on this, would these multiple universes, if this is valid, do you think, just your opinion, would they be duplicates of ours? Would they be completely different? Is there any way to know? Do you have a guess?
Well, look, the questions about black holes is kind of beyond me. I'm not really that up on that. But I haven't heard much about talking about the existence of white holes, so that might be a little dated. There is a concept of like a wormhole or a, like you say, revolving around the perimeter of a black hole coming out someplace else. An interesting question would that be in our universe or would that be in some other place or another universe? Just my gut, from what I understand about science, is if you could sort of maneuver that way, it would be someplace else in our universe, like maybe a kind of a shortcut or to get from one place to the other. The other thing is if it did go take us to another universe, it would have to be a universe with the same laws of physics and dimensionality as ours. Now, my thought is that if there are other universes, well, that's a very good question. Would they be like ours or not? It would only be able to throw out a guess. If they are all exactly like ours, you are forced into an intelligent design view of our universe because you're looking at the combination as opposed to the random lottery ticket. Okay? If you want to get away from that, they would have to be different with different laws of physics. You know, because that means just coincidentally we're in this one. But I honestly don't know. I would just venture this. I would tend to say that, and I'll kind of throw a little theology in here, is that it could very well, like say, if, let me take a theological view. Say if God made other universes, okay? Kind of don't really see any reason why I wouldn't, but you know, if from a Christian theological view, or let me backtrack. If you take a time of like an era where your man is returning to paradise, okay? Supposing if like you start in the Garden of Eden, which is kind of like paradise, and somehow there'll be a time of a heaven or something where man returns to paradise, it cannot be a return to the Garden of Eden because of the second law of thermodynamics that exists in our universe. You can't get an environment where you have no death and have the second law of thermodynamics. It's possible to have one species not experience death, okay? That live forever, keep healing itself. Now, there you could make arguments against that, but it wouldn't violate the second law of thermodynamics. But basically, things have to eat to stay alive. Something's going to have to die to get eaten, okay? So if you look at a biblical view of a future paradise, it can't be in our universe. It has to be in something with different laws of physics. And that's what I find interesting. If you read the book of Revelations, it talks about the old heavens and the old earth passing away, the new heavens and the new earth showing up, and it's describing something that doesn't have the sun and stars for light. They're not needed for light. So you're talking about different laws of physics.
Yeah. Also, in the Kabbalah, it talks about seven heavens. You referenced that earlier. Mm-hmm. I think I agree with you that they're talking about spiritual realms. Mm-hmm. But, you know, how you get there. I mean, presumably, you'd have to die to get there. Yeah. The process of getting there, apparently they had an understanding of this back then that we may not have now. Uh-huh. Any thoughts on how to achieve these or reach these other heavens that were referenced in the book?
Well, that would be, first it'd have to be a religious system that claims that there are different types of heavens, okay? And so an explanation of how to reach that would be within that religious system. Yeah. So what you'd want to do is you'd want to look, well, what's the credibility of this claim of religious system? And that's why I did a 10-part series of scientific look at the Bible. You know, it's not a Bible study. It's just hey, how credible is this claim from a scientific standpoint? But that is an interesting, but let me talk a little bit about a concept of a realm, okay? If there is a spiritual realm, okay, and one way to encounter that spiritual realm would to be to die, in a sense, okay? But there might be other ways that we would encounter that, okay, short of dying. And there's some interesting talks about people that have near-death experiences, okay, that are kind of beyond what we could explain with our physical realm and different concepts like that. So, let's see, where was I going to go with that? That would be the notion that, unlike a different universe, okay, that as a physical creature we can never physically get into another universe. If there is a spiritual realm, if we are a part of a spiritual being, we would have potentially some way to interact with a spiritual realm or some type of spiritual experiences. Now, there are people that would have a belief of a spiritual realm that don't believe in a God. Okay, let me give an example of some New Age beliefs that believe in the combined consciousness view of spirituality, or what I like to refer as a Star Wars model, where they talked about the Force kind of thing. And how would you account for that? Well, If there was no God, you would take a naturalistic explanation, like the multiverse or whatever, to a universe showing up without intelligence behind it. But maybe somehow life evolved, and then maybe when intelligent life evolved, that somehow evolved a spiritual realm. Okay, the problem I have with this is what I've came up with here is that you've got one of two difficult pills to swallow. Okay, to explain our universe. One is you have to swallow the pill that there is a God in a spiritual realm. Okay, to take a creation view. The second is, okay, you have to swallow a pill of that there's this huge multiverse thing out there that is very specific, that it's not just creating more universes like ours, it's creating them all random and just about an infinite number. That's a very extreme thing to have to swallow as well. You're kind of stuck with one of those two realities. Somebody that's in a New Age view has to swallow both pills. They got to swallow a naturalistic explanation of things. You've got this multiverse or something that's very extreme, and you've got to swallow the pill that there's a spiritual realm. It kind of like, because a combined consciousness could not have created the universe, because that showed up after the universe existed.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I mean, not only in the Hebrew traditions, but in others like Buddhism and I believe Zoroastrianism, and I think also a common number of seven levels in those as well. So wherever this belief derived from, it mm-hmm. probably had some sort of common source back at its root. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's valid, but it was mm-hmm. commonly believed back in the day.
Right. Yeah, and just because, say, like Christianity doesn't mention different levels of heaven doesn't mean that they're not there. Maybe it just doesn't mention them.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that, okay, you'll kind of cross that bridge when you get to it type of thing.
And also with Christianity, it seems like there was a lot more selective editing going on. And, you know, there seemed to be a lot of things that were selectively eliminated from the New Testament, things like, you know, the secret Gospel of Mark and other traditions that, you know, there was a comment, not all things are meant for all people, where, you know, some of the others, like in the Islamic religion, Sufism retained a lot of these traditions, and the others I mentioned. But in Christianity, this seemed by the church to be sort of driven underground. It doesn't mean it wasn't there. It's just, you know, the church leaders weren't crazy about this idea.
Okay. Any other questions, or shall we?
A couple of things.
Sure.
Could you explain the string theory a little bit?
No.
Okay.
Because I don't have a clue.
Yeah.
I'll
they have length, but no thickness, and they vibrate. Do you believe in miracles?
Let me sort of get to string theory for a second. I say no, because that's like way above my pay grade, so to speak, in physics. But, and I don't know how many people understand it. But a couple things about it is, with string theory, it requires that there are more space dimensions than the three that we have. Okay, there's like another. There's either 9 to 10 space dimensions, but in the universe started out with, I think, 9 space dimensions and 1 time dimension. But very early on, all but 3 of the space dimensions stopped expanding. The other 6 are very tightly curled up, so effectively we don't see them. Okay. Now, is string theory true? You know, you ask 10 physicists, you'll get 10 different opinions. And it's just one of the prevailing theories out there. It offers some good explanations to things, but there's a book that I want to read called The Trouble with Physics, which is about a guy that kind of says that, hey, thinks string theory is taking our best minds down the wrong track, you know. So it's very interesting and kind of speculative and controversial. But I wish I had the luxury to spend the time to try and understand it, and then I would wish I had the brain power to understand it as well. Miracles, yes, you know, I don't, you know, that could mean kind of a lot of different things,
yeah.
You know.
C.S. Lewis says people are divided into naturalists and supernaturalists. The naturalist says, well, there's nature in it, and that's the whole ball of wax. The supernaturalist says there's something, perhaps unknowable, that stands outside of nature, which is God. Anyone interested in a supernatural event?
Sure.
I can't explain.
Sure.
I've been to the home of Audrey Santa, a little girl in Worcester, Catholic home, and she's in a state of suspended animation. There's, and of course, statues of wept and paintings of wept, but in this home, little ceramic statues started dripping olive oil. And I've been this close to one of them, a little statue of the Virgin or the Savior. You see a little droplet of oil forming on its head and slowly running down. And people say, well, our science will explain this at some point. Why? And they've been x-rayed. How can a solid ceramic... This is not normal. I'm willing to consider. See, the naturalists will say, well, whatever these things are, they're not miracles. The famous French writer said, if I saw a miracle, I wouldn't believe it. But the supernaturalist is at least willing to consider they might be. Yeah, that's it.
Sure.
I'm willing to consider that.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am too. So, you know, it's not like it's anything you can measure or predict, but, you know.
Well,
I'll go ahead and